Welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series, where you can hear a sampling of stories from our back issues read aloud. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine, and for this episode, we have Pat Black reading his story, The Man in the Long Dark Coat, from our May-June 2022 issue. Journalist Pat Black is from Glasgow, Scotland, but he is currently based in Yorkshire, England. He is the author of 5 novels, the most recent being The Winter House, a psychological thriller published by Head of Zeus.
Ivan James took off his coat and hung it up in the nook just inside the front door. The hooks were dominated by his wife Tracy's jackets, bags, scarves, and latterly by tiny pale pink and purple anoraks that flared like speared fish when he parted them. Only one brass outcropping was definitely his, worn but shiny. Once his coat was suspended, he patted the shoulders and straightened the cuffs. Ivan took off his shoes, kicked them into their space at the bottom of a rack, and pushed open another door. Tracy gave him a look of pure contempt as he entered the front room. Their daughter Sue had been squalling on her shoulder, but brightened up when Daddy appeared. "Nice workout," Tracy sneered. "Yeah, not bad. You'll get the chance to go back on Saturday or Sunday morning, you know, like we said." Funny how things keep cropping up to put a stop to that, isn't it? Ivan ignored this and held his hands out for the baby. She beamed and held out her own hands. "Dada," she said. With the child gurgling on his shoulder, Tracy launched herself off her chair as if she'd held the starter's gun and made for the kitchen. Ivan took several deep breaths and tickled Sue under the chin. With his spare hand, he flicked over the TV to a news channel, increasing the volume to drown out the sound of crashing crockery from the kitchen. Police in West Bensmere have issued an appeal for information over the death of Ellen Brinkley. The 42-year-old was found dead with head injuries yesterday at her house in the semi-rural Blackstone Way. Officers have released CCTV footage of a person they'd like to trace in connection with the incident. Ivan gasped as the picture appeared on the screen, literally gasped. The names, times and the locations locked together in his mind with a terrible compact neatness as the footage unspooled. The CCTV was somewhat blocky, having been magnified. Through a gap in a hedge, a figure could be seen, walking with some haste. It was difficult to make out much detail at all. You couldn't have sworn to this person's hair or skin colour or sex, only that they were wearing a long, dark coat. The shot changed to a moving image of a young woman with long, dark hair, sharp features and large brown eyes. She was beautiful, but piercingly so, like a prima ballerina or a violinist, or certain actresses could be beautiful, but not lovely. The caption read, "D.S. Rose McIntyre." "This was a terrible crime," she said, "and we feel certain that someone will have an idea who this person is. Look closely at the footage. If you think you know who they are, get in touch with us." The shot changed to the same CCTV image of the man in the long dark coat slowed down. Ivan snatched the baby away from his shoulder as if scalded and placed her in her bouncy seat. She began to wail. Ivan bustled out of the door and along the hallway, past the coats and scarves. "Just forgot something in the car, sorry," he called out. "Back in 2 minutes." After 5 stomach-churning minutes in the front seat of the parked vehicle, his stricken features etched in pale blue by the light of a smartphone, Ivan James took a deep breath and made a decision. He dialed a special number appended to one of the online news reports. While he listened to Moonlight Sonata on hold, he had some bad moments and considered terminating the call. Perhaps that might draw attention, though. Perhaps someone who couldn't go through with the call would become a person of interest. Finally, someone answered. "Yes," he said, his voice quaking. "I'm calling about the murder in West Bensmere, the Ellen Brinkley case. I'm calling about, well, about me specifically. I'm the guy in the CCTV, the man in the long dark coat." D.S. McIntyre cracked the lid on her takeaway coffee and frowned at the rising heat. She watched the light quicken on the surface as she blew on it and said, "I wish they hadn't installed that machine. These things are nuclear." "I suppose burning your tongue wakes you up," said D.I. Fergus Link later, "and you will insist on taking it black." "Milk defeats the purpose." McIntyre braved a sip and winced. "Not even the milk of human kindness?" Linklater gulped at his latte as they made their way up the corridor towards the interview rooms. The place was in the process of being rewired, with the top half of the corridor cast in darkness and tentacled with loose cabling. The detectives made curious silhouettes as they walked together in pools of temporary light. Linklater was short, or shorter than McIntyre anyway, and stocky. He did not look like a policeman, with his proud bald head joined from ear to ear around the back by a dark orbital curve of hair and large glasses that accentuated pale blue eyes last seen on Dumbo. It had been said that he looked like a bank manager, though this ignored his dress sense, which on some days was merely terrible. Today, Linklater had on a sober midnight blue suit, spoiled by a pink and pastel blue striped shirt, and sliced straight down the middle by a bright red tie knotted far too thinly. He looked like the rapper in a boiled sweetie, the kind that glued your teeth together. McIntyre gestured towards the interview room with her cup. Did you forget to bring him one? He's happy with water. There's enough in there for him to drown in, if he likes. After being cleared into the interview room, they came face to face with Ivan James and his lawyer. The space was blank and functional, with its camera equipment well hidden. Even if it had been kitted out cosier than a Christmas card, there was no hiding place in the interview room. McIntyre always lamented how unflattering the bright strip lighting was. It accentuated the hollows underneath Ivan James's eyes and cast shadows beneath a firm, clean-shaven jaw. Despite Linklater's comic strip clothes, the suspect focused on McIntyre as she came in and laid her drink on the table. James's solicitor was a compact little man with a shaved head and deep-set eyes. He scribbled notes furiously even before McIntyre and Linklater got the formalities over with, advising him of his rights and reminding him that he was being interviewed under caution. You're here to talk about this interesting piece of film footage, Linklater said brightly. James nodded. Talk us through it then. In fact, I think we've got it here. Linklater clicked on his tablet screen. A bigger screen mounted on the wall showed the familiar footage. The man, walking at some pace, pictured through the hedge. The man on the image is me, there's no doubt about that, James said slowly. I can even tell you the street. I can too, said Linklater, and the time. It was 8:47 p.m. on Saturday. This was Blackstone Way, the street Ellen Brinkley lived on. And you say this person is you, you've no doubt. None at all, James said. I recognise the coat. Yeah, the coat, Linklater mused. It's about the only distinctive thing we can see here. Your team is taking a good close look at it. It is a nice coat, perfect for this kind of weather. Thin enough, but you never be cold with it on. All the heat, none of the sweatiness. You look like you sweat a lot, James ventured. Oh yeah, Linklater agreed without breaking stride. I spring a leak whenever the sun shines, truly despicable. I leave the face of Christ on every wooden bench I sit down on. So can you explain to us what you were doing in Blackstone Way? James took a deep breath, then said, I was there because I was having an affair with someone else who lives on Blackstone Way. McIntyre, who had been focused on taking notes, looked up for a moment. You saw them that night? He nodded. Yes, her name is Lilith Barnswick. She lives at the far end of Blackstone Way. He patiently spelled the name out. And she can confirm this, McIntyre asked. James shrugged. Go and ask her. Describe your movements that evening, if you would, Linklater urged him. I understand that you were at work that night, is that correct? Yes, I work a back shift on a Saturday. Let's have the details, Linklater said. Where you work, when you start, it's all very important. Sure. James cleared his throat. I work in finance, Lancelin Insurance. There's an office in West Bensmere. It's the oddest spot for an office you could imagine. Sit near the marshes, close enough to hear the frogs. You know West Bensmere? Close enough to see the skyline of the city centre, but if you turn in the other direction, you think you're in the jungle. You can see cows from the window, combine harvesters, that kind of thing. What is it you do at Lancelin? McIntyre asked. I work on the phones, dealing with claims, car insurance, sometimes home insurance. It can be busy. Linklater chuckled, hey, you're telling me. I prang my car one Saturday afternoon on a bollard. I'm still traumatised whenever I hear holding music. What time did you start work? 4. The shift runs till 11:30. McIntyre said, so, you say you saw this woman. Lilith, was it? James nodded. This was during your shift? Yeah, I take an hour's break. His jaw tensed. So when did your break start and when did you go back? My break starts at 8 p.m. I take a walk out. I head back at 9 p.m. Then I finish the shift. And this is when you saw this other woman, Linklater asked. That's right. I went to see Lilith for my break at her place. Came back, finished my shift. He stared at a point over McIntyre's shoulder as he said this. She sensed Linklater shifting in his seat. Fearful he might make a silly comment, she said, "We have to ask, does your wife know about this?" "No, of course she doesn't. Neither does Lilith's husband, if you're asking." This last was delivered in a slightly petulant tone. "I was about to," McIntyre said. "So what does this Lilith do for a living? How do you know her?" "Lilith is a barmaid at the Gunnels. That's the pub round the corner from the office on West Bensmere Main Street. We've sunk a lot of our wages in there over the years." "The Gunnels," Linklater grinned. "Great name. So she wasn't working that night?" "Nah, she works early on the Saturday. Pub lunches, early football crowd. She comes home for 5 p.m. usually, unless she takes overtime. She didn't that day. Just after 8, she's ready for me." "You work at Lancelin Insurance, is that right?" McIntyre showed him an online map she consulted on her phone. "West Bensmere Main Street, that's the place." "So you finish for your break at 8 p.m, then you said you walk to Blackstone Way. You don't take your car?" "That's what I said," James agreed. "Looking at the road here, I'd say it's quite a walk. Doesn't leave much time for leisure if you need to walk back for 9 p.m. "You could say I'm a fast worker." "It's a good 3 or 4 miles, Mr. James," McIntyre said, spoiling her delicate black eyebrows with a frown. "With the best will in the world, it can't be covered on foot. Or it could, but it wouldn't leave you much time for anything else. Unless by fast worker you mean literally seconds." He grinned. He liked that. "Not as the crow flies. You're just looking at the main road. As I said, Lancelin Insurance is near the marshes. There's a shortcut directly behind the office. Boarded walk over the wetlands. You don't even get your shoes wet. Once you get past the nature reserve, there's a B road. Takes you up to Blackstone Way, direct. That gets you there in less than 5 minutes." "I see," McIntyre said, recalibrating the map. "That's interesting." "What was this Lilith's husband doing at the time?" Linklater asked, leaning forward. "He was working. In the same office as me," James said. "He didn't smirk, but it looked like he wanted to. Name's Simon Barnswick." "So you spent 40 minutes with Lilith and then you got back on the road in time to get back to the office for 9 p.m, McIntyre asked. "That's right. I must have gone past the house with the camera. That's me, going down Blackstone Way to the kissing gate that gets you onto the B road. It's a lovely walk, in fact, especially at this time of year. Quite lonely in winter, but fine if there's light in the sky. Kind of place I wouldn't want my wife walking down on her own." McIntyre made a note. "Did you know Ellen Brinkley?" Linklater asked. "Woman who was killed?" "No," James said. "I don't know anyone by that name. Maybe if I give you a picture." Linklater clicked to tablet, bringing up a static image on the big screen. A woman in her 40s appeared. She had a broad smile with blonde highlights and her long hair. She was heavily made up, and her skin tone and texture hinted at too much time spent under the sun or its nearest ultraviolet equivalent. But she was a striking woman, with a sly cast to her dark eyes. James glanced at the picture, narrowed his eyes, pursed his lips, then said, "Nah, sorry." "She was quite pretty," McIntyre said. "You're sure you don't know her?" James laughed. "Pretty or not, I don't know her, do I?" He considered the image again. "How did she die?" "Someone smashed her face in," Linklater said. "I'm not sure what they used to do it." "Dreadful scene. You can imagine. This happened at the house she shared with her husband. We've already cleared him. He's a long-distance lorry driver. He'd been away a few nights, but due back that night, that Saturday. He found her when he got home a few hours later. There was no sign of a break-in. It seems someone just walked in off the street." "Jesus," was all James said after exhaling. Linklater picked out pieces of gherkin from his sandwich with fastidious little snips and jerks, like a squirrel worrying an acorn. "What do you reckon?" he asked. "To what?" On the other side of the canteen table, McIntyre spoke with her mouthful of chicken salad hoagie. "To Mr. Loverman." McIntyre shrugged. "Not formed an opinion yet." "He's formed an opinion of you." Linklater steepled an eyebrow. "Not sure what you mean?" "Give over. He couldn't have been flirting harder with you if he'd tried. I'm sure I caught him tipping you a wink when he thought I wasn't looking." "He's quite a handsome man," McIntyre mused. "Quite a sly look to him, though. I suspect he's one of these people who gets punched a lot, whether he deserves it or not." "A player, then," Linklater noted. "But is he a killer?" I honestly don't know, McIntyre said. No hunch either way. Forensic results back on the coat yet? It'll be a while before they can confirm. But Rosalind Price told me off the record that it's clean. No sign of any fibres from the house. I remember a cloakroom on the inside of Ellen Brinkley's front door, McIntyre said. He could easily have hung the coat up and collected it on his way out. Chance of blood transferring, though, Linklater mused. Must have been plenty of spatter. He tutted, finding something in the strips of pastrami that weren't to his liking. Any word back on the other woman, the mysterious Lilith? Yeah, we got a statement from her. She admitted the lot. She's not sure of the times, though. Reckons he was there bang on 8 p.m, but can't swear to it. Anything on his phone? McIntyre shook her head. He switched it off. Now, that I don't like, she shrugged. Clandestine bloke doing clandestine things. You'd switch your mobile off, wouldn't you? If you were up to what he was up to. I resent the very suggestion, Linklater said, mock offended. I think we made a mistake not charging him. Nothing to charge him with. He walked down the street when she was killed. He spotted himself on the telly and called us. Nothing to link him to the case. Nothing yet, anyway. This is where you tell me you don't like him, McIntyre said. Linklater smiled and let his sandwich drop. Bah, I don't know why I bother going to that shop. Because the canteen's rubbish? Well, I don't know why I ordered this sandwich then. It's all pickles and pepper. If you're not having it... Ah, go on, it's your lucky day. He pushed the remaining unpicked sandwich towards McIntyre, who took a huge bite from it and grinned. Ivan James knew she'd cleared the place out when he got to the path leading to the front door. There was some oddity in the quality of the light through the curtains. It was down to the fact that the light shone directly onto the wall and not onto the midi landscape photo she'd installed there on the day they moved in. A quick glance at the cloakroom confirmed his suspicions. They were clear of his wife and daughter's clothes. The shoe rack was similarly nude, only the dirty faces of his trainers poking through, the laces like a knotted sheet trailing from a prison window. Unfortunately, Tracy was still there. He gave a start when he saw her, sat at the kitchen table. She was sipping at some soup. She wore an overcoat. What's going on, he said. As if you have to ask. Tracy sounded calm, but couldn't quite bring herself to look into his face. Where's the little one? That's no concern of yours. That'll be right. Anger pulsed at his temples. Remember to breathe, he thought. In and out. Where is she? At Mum's, where do you think? Where's the rest of the stuff? That's at Mum's too. I'm off, Ivan. He leaned against the kitchen wall and folded his arms. You're off? Yeah, for good. She sipped at the soup again, the spoon steady in her hand, the scooping motion slow and deliberate. West Bensmere, that's an interesting place. Tracy, it doesn't take long to piece it all together, you know. West Bensmere, and the name of the street too. I looked at you, that video of you on the news, the national news, and wondered where you'd been gone for a full night and most of a day. West Bensmere, about 8 o'clock. When you were working. Look, if you're going to... Did you kill her? You probably didn't. Surely they'd have arrested you if you did. But it does leave some interesting questions, doesn't it? And you've cleared out, Ivan spluttered. On the back of that, you're leaving? For good? Don't act so surprised. This marriage was dead before we had Sue. You didn't even call to ask how she was. You didn't say goodnight to her. You didn't even give us that courtesy. Then why are you still here? I felt like some target practice. He did well to get out of the way of the flying bowl, though he was not quite so lucky with the red splatter that disgorged. Fortunately, it was not piping hot. He could taste it as he bared his teeth, that chemical tomato tang. You've got 5 seconds to get out, he heard someone say to his wife, and don't come back. I hope they jail you, she smirked, wiping her hands on a dish towel. I might even bring her girl down to court. Might be the last time she sees you. She walked past him, bold, grinning at him as the soup dripped off his face and left a serpentine trail down the back of his hand. I even knew that terrible temptation, that synaptic link to action that bypassed thought. He saw himself grabbing her by the throat and dashing his fist into her face. The face behind the veil he'd lifted at the altar. The face he'd watched contorted in pain only a few months ago when their child was born as he'd heard sort of breathe. Just breathe. He clenched a fist, but that was all he did. He finally exhaled after the door slammed behind her. Ivan's work pass still allowed him to get into the car park. He got there far too early and waited in his berth for 10 minutes, letting cool air seep in through the window as the superstructure of the vehicle contracted in slow ticks. In at the front door, and a red light and a sudden beep at the sensor told him that parking privileges did not extend to entry to the building. Sat at the front desk directly before the turnstile gate, Hamish, the security guard, gave a start as he saw him. Ivan was reminded of a nature documentary he'd seen, where the camera had caught a diver's reaction to the sly orbit of an immense shark. "Ivan," Hamish began. "I'm just in to collect one or two bits and pieces," Ivan said. He flashed the security pass as a policeman might show his warrant card. "I won't be long." "Well, no, Ivan," Hamish got up. He was a big man, but bumptious with it. "It might hurt if he hit you," but with his white shirt struggling to completely contain his belly, matted burgundy hair and stubble that started half an inch beneath his eyes, you couldn't imagine him hitting you. "Thing is, mate, I've got instructions not to allow you upstairs." "Oh, it's okay, I collected your stuff. It's all here, man." The big man ducked beneath the desk and emerged with an empty box of, a fine insult this, disposable nappies clearly snagged from the local shop, filled with Ivan's desk folder all in photos. Hamish held the box out, not moving from his desk. James sighed. "I can't reach. You'll have to bring it over to me, Hamish." "Oh." The guard lifted the box and strolled over. As Ivan reached over the barrier to take it, there was a sudden commotion to his right. A door opened, was yanked shut again. Voices were raised, and then the door opened again, and Simon Barnswick appeared. He was short but sinewy, with gaunt cheeks and a smoker's eyes. The sort of man you would never slag off for his lack of height. His face was pale, and his eyes were brimming with tears. His lips moved when he saw Ivan, and for an odd moment, it looked as if he wanted to run over and embrace him. Ivan laid the box down and prepared for it. The little man vaulted the security gate with a commendably fluid motion and piled in. Ivan turned away from the bulk of it, but one punch snapped his head to one side, and after that the synapses lit up, all connections in full working order, and before he knew it, he had Simon Barnswick's head pinned against the glass turnstile by one forearm. With his free hand, James punched him in the face again and again and again. Barnswick's blood trickled down the glass in pinkish streaks. "No wonder," James heard someone say. "No wonder she came to me, pipsqueak, pissant. No wonder." He snatched up the Lancelin Golf Weekend trophy from his box of belongings, took a half second to weigh it up in the palm of his hand, while Barnswick's hands groped for his face, and then dashed it right between the swollen red barrows where the other man's eyes had been. That's when Hamish burst through the manually controlled gate and showed how handy he was after all. James was lifted up and away as easily as he might have lifted his own daughter. His feet flailed for a good couple of seconds. "I'll do it, eh?" Hamish said in a jocular tone. "That's all for now, Ivan, pal. Come on now." Ivan had a glimpse of someone checking Simon Barnswick's pulse at the neck while his head lolled to one side, drooling blood, before he was rushed outside, his box of belongings racing him to the bottom of the steps. Linklater and McIntyre were kept waiting a long time in the front room with their hands folded. There wasn't even the ticking of a clock to distract them, just the occasional sigh of cars passing in the street at the bottom of the estate and the odd growl from Linklater's stomach, which he disguised with a cough. "Where did she go?" Linklater whispered at last. "Think she's done a runner?" Before McIntyre could answer, Tracy James appeared in the front room doorway. "Goodness me," Linklater said, "those slippers are soft. I didn't hear you come down the stairs." "Sorry, the baby needed feeding," Tracy said, addressing McIntyre rather than the excitable little man next to her. "Sorry to keep you waiting." "We're here to ask about your husband," McIntyre said. "Ex-husband, or soon to be." Tracy showed the two detectives where a wedding band had once been, a place worn smooth beneath her surprisingly raw knuckles. "Did he ever have a habit of working late?" "No, he always got home at his usual time. The past week or so he'd started going back to the gym." "Was he a regular gym goer?" Linklater asked. "Yeah, we both were. I stopped when I got pregnant. You probably wouldn't think it to look at me." "Don't say that," McIntyre said softly. "Friends always said that to me. I lucked out. I ended up with a handsome one. The one who worked out and looked after himself. Such a decent man too," they said. "Were there any times he worked late?" Linklater asked. "No, always came home on time." "Even when he worked on a Saturday?" "His bloody Saturday shifts. Been in my life. No, to be fair, he was always straight back home after he finished. He never went for a pint or anything like that, McIntyre asked. Down at his local, maybe, after he drove home. Nah, he wasn't a pint down the local type guy. If he was out, he was out-out, you know? Linklater gave McIntyre a quizzical look. He said, out-out? I'm afraid I don't... Nightclubs, I mean. 3 a.m, with his mates from uni, or 1 or 2 fellow chancers from work. Spent a few nights staring at the green numbers on the alarm clock, wondering if that would be the night he wouldn't come back. But that was a long time ago. There's been nothing like that since. Tracy folded her arms and said, he did it, didn't he? Did what? McIntyre asked. Oh, come on. Tracy laughed bitterly. I saw him on the TV. I recognised that stupid walk even on the telly. Chin and arse out, my dad used to say. Chest tucked in. Walks around like a Dickensian ragamuffin, which is all he ever was. So, did he do it? We're just trying to piece together your husband's movements, McIntyre said. It's a very complex investigation. He hasn't been charged with anything yet. He must have something from the forensics and whatnot. I've seen that stuff on the telly. Was he having an affair? What do you think? Linklater asked. So he was then, she smirked. Not that it matters. Our relationship was on life support ages ago. You can blame that on having a kid, but it was probably wrecked long before. It happens with some men. They can't handle it. The hassle. The responsibility. Even when I've got someone like me to do all the work. I suspected he was seeing someone. Wouldn't surprise me that much. What makes you say that? McIntyre asked. Just a change in his attitude. He could go on and off the boil, but he was just distant. They do say that, though, about the opposite of love not being hatred. What is it then, Linklater asked? Indifference? Not exactly. Distraction, I think. Not so much lack of attention as a lack of paying attention, if you follow me. Is your baby quite young, Mrs. James? McIntyre asked. 8 months. You could probably tell by the pitch of the screaming. She grinned at Linklater. Goes right through you, doesn't it? Screaming baby never bothered me, Mrs. James, he said soberly. Regarding Ivan, and I know this is a delicate subject, you said things had been bad between you. Had you been rowing a lot? She shrugged. Sure, we were married. It's a given, isn't it? Did things turn nasty? McIntyre asked. They turn nasty quite a lot. Tracy leaned against the frame of the door. He can be a very cutting man. Did things ever get physical, McIntyre pressed? A lifted hand? Did they ever push you, grab you, anything like that? Tracy's gaze flitted between the two detectives. A smile spread across her face. It illuminated her features, particularly her prominent cheekbones, and gave her an altogether different aspect. Quite attractive for McIntyre's mind. Yeah, once or twice, things got a bit physical, sure. Did he lift his hands then, McIntyre said, hit you or threaten to hit you? Just told you, Tracy said, things would get physical. They can do between a husband and wife. We've had our tense moments. I think a drink got thrown on the floor once. A plate got smashed. But did he hit you, McIntyre said, a slap or a punch, a shove? Maybe, she shrugged. I can't say for sure. We've had our moments, put it that way. So, did he hit you, McIntyre asked, yes or no? Not in so many... I mean, things got out of hand now and again, but nothing... Were you ever in a fight then, McIntyre asked. Are you implying I hit him? Did he or did he not hit you, Tracy? Linklater asked gently. Even just the once? Not in so many words, Tracy said at last. Not when you phrase it like that. He'd use every psychological trick going, gaslighting, you name it, but no. I don't think he was ever directly violent like that. He didn't hit me, I suppose. That's fine, McIntyre said. Sorry. We have to ask. It's a grim job at times. Some of the stories we hear are harrowing, believe me. It's fine, love, Tracy said, drawing her a very cool look. You've got a job to do. Look, I just want to start by saying, he came at me. All right? He jumped over the gate, started throwing punches. It didn't go his way. That's all I want to say. Linklater and McIntyre let this brew for a few moments in the stark quiet of the interview room, before McIntyre said, we're not here to talk about that incident, Ivan, though it is why you've been detained. This is about the other matter. What happened to Ellen Brinkley? Ivan laughed like an old car's ignition failing. Imagine he'd died, though, Simon Barnswick. That would have been something, eh? His lawyer made a quick peremptory gesture, and Ivan said, sorry. McIntyre frowned and pointed at him. Some of those, what are they, gouge marks? They look quite raw. Have you had some medical attention? Nah, just tender loving care would be fine. He gazed at McIntyre as he said this. The more like scratches, really. He tore at my face. Punched me on the other side of the cracker, though. Fair play to him for that one. It'll look good in the morning. Linklater, somewhat nettled at being left out of this exchange, said, We need to go back to last Saturday, Ivan. The time you spent out of Blackstone Way with Lilith. How long have you known her? Oh God, as long as I've been working there. Familiar face, you know. And would you say the Gunnels was the place to go to in West Bensmere? You laughed again. You could say that. Turns into a bit of a meat market at the weekends. I think I stood out for her a bit. West Bensmere is where many social lives go to die. It's not exactly the liveliest place. Bit chocolate boxy. Mortgages and Audis, that sort of town. I stick out a bit. That's what I've been told anyway. How often did you go, Linklater asked. After work, I guess. Quick half? Nothing I could get arrested for. I've got to drive. Yeah, I go for a half pint now and again, but never after work. I always came back home right after I finished. I go during my break sometimes. And some days I go to the gym, drive over, have a quick coffee before I started. That was before we had Sue. McIntyre asked, And did you ever meet other women at the Gunnels? He paused at this, tapping his finger. Sure, I met other women there. Did you sleep with any of them? What's that got to do with anything? I'd like an answer. Yes. How many? In one night or in total? I don't think that's funny, Linklater said. No, I can see you wouldn't. How many women would you say you slept with in West Bensmere? McIntyre interjected. Three or four, maybe. Over quite a few years. I don't think all of them lived in the town. I couldn't tell you all their names off the top of my head. McIntyre took a sip of coffee. If I said that you'd been seen talking to Ellen Brinkley at the Gunnels on several occasions, what would you think? I suppose I'd be taken aback, James said after a pause. That would be a little surprising, sure. Are you absolutely sure, Ivan, that you didn't know Ellen Brinkley? Guess I could have spoken to her once or twice over the years. Many people have you spoken to in pubs, D.S. McIntyre? I don't go to pubs. So, you think you might have spoken to Ellen Brinkley? Her face wasn't familiar, but yeah, that could be accurate. I might have spoken to her once or twice. Sure, I'll go with that. Here's a question now, Linklater said brightly. Putting on a soft Irish accent, he asked, Are you careful, lad? James snorted laughter. You what? Careful? Linklater grinned and folded his arms. When you're with these women, how careful are you? You mean, like, careful in bed? In bed, on the floor, over the balcony, on the chandelier, anywhere you like, yeah. Precautions and whatnot. I'd say I'm very careful. Condoms, McIntyre asked. Yes, I can give you the brand if you like. This brand, McIntyre held up her phone. Yes, James agreed. And then something extraordinary happened. He seemed to deflate. His face, his shoulders, his general demeanour, all sagged. All it took was a tiny pinprick, McIntyre thought to herself, if you'll pardon the expression. Yes, those are the ones, James said. Once you've had sex, what do you do with the condoms, Ivan? McIntyre asked brightly. Not sure, I wrap them up, take them with me sometimes, lob them into a ditch by the fields. Lovely, McIntyre said in the same light tone. That night you flushed them though, didn't you? I could have done, I'm not sure. Mrs. Barnswick was sure, Linklater said. She told us all about your evening in surprising detail. She's got a good eye. She should be working with us. She said that she had warned you not to flush them away before. It's environmentally unsound, she told us. She also said that she was worried that one might not flush properly and her husband might come home, see something in there, put two and two together and get four. Well, better that than taking a risk with a bin, James said. He was putting on a front now and not remotely convincing with it. He could not keep his hands at peace. Safest option for your basic backdoor man. Then McIntyre struck. And if we told you we'd found a used condom in exactly the way Mrs. Barnswick worried about, lodged in Ellen Brinkley's toilet, what would you think about that? Same brand you use, what would your reaction be? James said nothing. How about your brake system on a Saturday? Linklater asked. James looked puzzled. I don't... Linklater's smile faded. We know about the system. That's what it's called in your internal emails, capital T, capital S. We know how you and two or three others work a little number. You'd use old security cards from former employees that hadn't been properly decommissioned. So far as the system shows, you haven't left the building. This lets you take a bit longer in your break time than you should. You and a couple of office mates take turns for this when you work on Saturday evenings. You pick up each other's calls, you cover for each other, and because it's Saturday night, no one checks. Your line managers are in on it as well, which explains how you get away with it. Simon Barnswick was part of it. Because of this, he helped facilitate you sleeping with his wife. I'm sure the irony struck him when he found out. But you can't fool the security cameras or the keystroke counter installed on your computers. That Saturday night, how long were you out of the office on your break? I don't know. Sometimes I go over my time. I try not to stay out too long. It would draw attention. It's not an exact science. 1 hour and 37 minutes. That's how long between you doing any meaningful work on your terminal at Lancelin on Saturday night. Someone moved your mouse now and again to make sure your machine didn't log out through inactivity, but no work was done. James said nothing. McIntyre said, were you at Ellen Brinkley's house either before or after you visited Mrs. Barnswick on that Saturday night, Ivan? If Ivan James had sagged before, now he collapsed. He sat forward, no longer the Jack and Apes, his fists clenched, his head bent low. And then, at another gesture from his lawyer, the litany began. I've got no comment to make. Did you sleep with both Mrs. Barnswick and Mrs. Brinkley that evening, Ivan? No comment. Have you been lying to us, Ivan? An edge crept into McIntyre's voice. As I told you just a few moments ago, I have no comment to make. He sat back, arms folded, legs crossed under the table at the ankle, and slowly exhaled. Nice street, Link later observed from the car window. Lot of greenery. It's all a bit tight, though, isn't it? Bit compact. Yep, too cosy. A nice street for dolls. McIntyre signalled and pulled in front of a cottage with a perfectly kept garden. As they got out, the curtains twitched. Linklater waved at the window with the inanity of a children's TV presenter. He had some nerve wandering right down the middle of the street, like a gunfighter. He wasn't bothered about who knew what he was doing. Thrived on it, maybe, McIntyre said. He's not the world's most sensitive or discreet man. We're nowhere near the Brinkley or Barnswick houses. Yeah, but this is where we first saw him. McIntyre gestured towards the beautifully kept house. Good job you waved. You're on candid camera. Oh, hey, it's well hidden. Look at the trellis hung with ivy. Camera's in there, not in a bush like we thought. Look at the top of the arch. You can see a glint. I can't see anything, and I'm the one with glasses. Linklater grinned. Why do I feel an epiphany coming on? You don't need to have one. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. This is where you tell me you don't think he did it. There was no bitterness in Linklater's voice. He'd worked with McIntyre long enough. I know he didn't do it. Linklater followed McIntyre as she crossed the street. She stood at the lamppost directly across from the cottage. This is where the man in the long dark coat came past in the footage. He walks past the lamppost. Lamppost's in the foreground. Linklater shrugged. Okay. How tall is Ivan James? Not as tall as you might think. Strong features, short legs. About 5'9", if that. Ivan James was measured at 5'8" and 55/64". 55/64", Linklater spluttered. Is that even possible? Couldn't you find a lower common denominator than that? That's the measurement, precisely. Now look at the lamppost. 5'8" and the leftovers is marked here by me. McIntyre was a good bit taller than the black line penned on the lamppost she indicated. Linklater didn't doubt it was exactly horizontal. McIntyre pointed to another black line much further up. Now look at this mark. This is the top of the head of the man in a long dark coat who walks past the CCTV camera. And what's the measurement? Spare me the fractions if you can. 6'1", let's say. How can you be so precise? I had it all analysed, 3D schematics based on a survey of the street in the camera image, plus the height and angle the shot was taken from, and how far away the man was from the lamppost as he walks behind it. It's an exact figure. Linklater had turned pale. The guy in the video wasn't Ivan James. McIntyre shook her head. James is on the street. The times tally up, but he didn't walk past that camera. It's right at the far end, away from the two houses he visited that night. He went to Lilith Barnswick's house, then Ellen Brinkley's, but he never walked past this house with the CCTV. He'd already turned off the street, down the lane towards the B Road, and then the path through the marshes and back to the office. Several minutes late, we should note. But he recognised himself. His wife recognised him, in fact. She mentioned that weird swagger he's got. You can't see that swagger on the screen. It's not obvious. If anything, the man you can see stoops forward a little, meaning he could be taller than 6'1" if he's standing up straight. Ivan James and his wife saw exactly the same thing on screen, what they wanted to see. They were hoodwinked. Everyone was, thanks to the coat. It's distinctive. It's the same type of coat, but it's not the same man. Ivan James assumed he'd been recorded on a nosy neighbour's CCTV much further down the street. He wasn't. He didn't walk down this far. There was no need to. Why would you take the risk of walking the length of the street in the open if you'd just killed someone when you had a back route you could take and a good chance no one would spot you? We've got evidence James was at Ellen Brinkley's, no disputing that. But there's no forensic evidence linking him to the actual killing. Not a speck of blood, and there was a lot of it. The man in the long dark coat that we saw in the video wasn't Ivan James. The killer wasn't Ivan James. Stuart Oliver, Lancelot Insurance's head of IT, was tall, with short black hair and a fringe cut into spearheads. His combat trousers and round-neck t-shirt were the exact same shade of olive, and McIntyre thought he'd stepped from a boy band video from the late 1990s. He had a chain around his neck, decorated with a medallion that looked too much like a real razor blade for comfort. She didn't like the way he kept sipping at a full sugar soda whenever he took time to consider a response. "Well, yeah," Oliver said, pulling at a beard you wouldn't notice until you got close up. "There was something going on with the time and date, sure. I mean, I can see that from the records. I sent it to you the other day, didn't I?" "I hear they had a scam going," McIntyre said. "Old security passes. It meant that a few of the boys working on a Saturday night could get away for an extra 10, 15 minutes without anyone necessarily knowing that they hadn't been at their desk. Is that kind of thing possible?" "I wouldn't put it past them," the IT chief said. "Bunch of naughty boys on that top floor. Lot of pranks over the year. One time, one of them switched the hot and cold water taps, and there was this woman. I'm surprised a scam involving security passes got beyond a guy like you," Linklater said, "right under your nose." "It didn't really get past me," Oliver said after a sip of soda. "I knew all about it." "That doesn't surprise me," Linklater said, "but a young guy like you. How many passes were there?" "Hard to say, 3 or 4. I think they rotated them." McIntyre smiled brightly. This had its usual predictable effect. Oliver smiled back. "And what pass did you use?" "Me?" He sipped at the soda. "Yeah, what pass did you use? You were involved in the system, I'm assuming. You had to have been. Quite a good scam. Foolproof, I guess." "But the keystrokes, that damns you. You'd need to trust someone to use your computer terminal while it's still signed in. I imagine you had some amount of hijinks with each other's email addresses. Wouldn't know anything about that, wouldn't you?" McIntyre's smile faded. "It seems to me that you're hiding something. To be fair, it probably won't be that much of an issue for the investigation. Minor detail. Got most of what we need. It might need a warrant, of course. I'd have to go through all the official channels, make a request with your bosses, pull out all the records." Oliver pulled his beard again. "That might be a bit awkward. Here's another idea. I could maybe have a look around, see what you want to see. You can have my full cooperation." McIntyre beamed again. "I was hoping you'd be a help." "Oh boy," Linklater chuckled, clapping his hands. "I didn't have to say a word. She's good, isn't she, mate?" Oliver produced a fresh can of soda from a drawer and pulled himself closer to the computer screen. It dwarfed every other terminal in the office. Oliver had made sure he sent out his colleagues, leaving an audience for stock image screensavers spread out across the other desks. On Oliver's computer screen, a nest of thumbnail images spread out, showing various security camera images. They were crystal clear, displaying a variety of shifting scenes, some featuring people sat at their desk, others of people passing through the corridors and heading into the blinding white haven of the toilets, and others showing ghostly half-lit rooms with no people anywhere. "This is the cameras from that Saturday. We've got 24 images to choose from. Now, on the second floor, that's where Ivan James is. Let me maximise this window now. That's camera 14. Here we go." The image blew up, losing some definition, but still sharp enough to make out the faces. There was Ivan James, dressed in a pale blue polo shirt, in full view of the camera with a headset on. This is at the start of his shift. "Now, let's move things on a bit." Oliver's hands went to the mouse, clicking on a toolbar that sped up the recorded image. "There we are. Bang on time, he leaves." As you know, he kept his computer on, but as far as the security system knows, he's logged out with an old pass that was never decommissioned. And fast forward, Ivan James zipped out of the building. The moving image was synced with the other cameras. And here we are, camera 15, he makes his way downstairs. And here he goes, heading out the main door, swiping with the old pass and into the street. Camera 20 shows that he's out in the main forecourt, off the premises and turning right, it looks like. Strange. Not much down there unless he's going to the marsh. McIntyre sat forward. Can you minimise the main screen, please? Oh, sure. Now, when does he get back? Once he'd found the right images, Oliver whistled. Naughty boy, tallies in with what we got from the keystrokes. That might be a record. 9:37. Chancer, Link later remarked. You say this goes on a lot. They take it in turns week on week, have this massive break, go to the pub and whatnot. I don't think I should say anything about that, Oliver said, sitting back in his seat. McIntyre's eyes reflected the screen in silvery shards. How many security cameras did you say are on site? 24. I'm missing something here. I'm only counting 23. Huh? Oliver flinched in his seat, startling the two detectives. Now, would you look at that? That's odd. You said 24 security cameras. Are you sure about that? Absolutely. We carry out checks every week. Let me just take a look at the live images. You'll see for yourself. She's right. There are 24 images now, Link later observed. So what's missing from Saturday night's feed? What camera was offline? McIntyre tapped the image on screen, showing the live image of camera number one. Who was on that desk on Saturday night? Not that guy, Oliver said. That's Terry. He works days. We've got another guy who does evenings and nights. They do 12 hours on, 12 hours off. Hamish sat down at the empty canteen table. He was tall, about 6'2", McIntyre estimated, but not in great shape. The sleeves of his shirt were too long, and clips on his arms stopped the cuffs from swamping his huge hands. McIntyre spoke soothingly to him. First things first, why did you turn off the security camera on Saturday night, Hamish? The big man looked like he had difficulty breathing. It's complicated. I think there was a malfunction, something wrong with it. I reported it to IT. You did, but IT found out you turned it off from your desk. So you stepped out just after 8 p.m, and then you got into your car, which you had parked off-site. One of the local residents saw this and complained about it to a local councillor, would you believe? Took a note of the number. She saw you drive off somewhere. She said you were wearing a long, dark coat. She remembers that very clearly. Hamish inhaled, opened his mouth, then closed it again. He began to sweat. Your computer terminal shows no activity until 9 p.m. when you were back at the desk, McIntyre said. Did you work the same scam with the other guys? The system? The fake passes thing? I don't... Risky thing to do for the only security guard on duty. You must have trusted someone to look after things. It's a good team we've got there, usually. Hamish smiled weakly. He began to sweat under the eyes. Linklater's demeanour had totally changed. No jokes, no goofiness. He said, so do you head to the Gunnels then, when you clock out? Sure. Would you say you were good friends with Ellen Brinkley, the lady who had her face smashed in? Linklater's jaw tensed. Must have taken some strength to do that to anyone. It was an appalling scene. Blood all over. And do you know, we had the Marshes dragged. He turned to McIntyre. I mean, of all the things, a rolling pin. Someone went into the kitchen drawer, found an old rolling pin, and smashed that woman's head in with it. Can you imagine that, Hamish? Can you? Before he started to cry, Hamish managed to say, I loved her. We had one night together, but I loved her for years. She said she felt sorry for me. I was planning on going to see her one night, a Tuesday. Then I saw that sleazy bastard Ivan James in her house while her man was away. She told me she didn't want to see me again, wanted to stay friends. Then I found out she was with Ivan. Why would she want someone like him? Why? He's had everyone. Is that tart from the Gunnels not good enough for him? I mean, what's wrong with a guy like that? As they stood in the back doorway of the Gunnels, watching the rain come down heavy, Linklater said, I don't know what my personal best is. I wouldn't like to say, you know, but two women in one lunch break is steady work. I'd say it's pretty good going, wouldn't you? McIntyre shrugged. I suppose. I mean, you'd have to have eaten your greens and all that, right? two women in 1 hour. I mean, I'm not saying it's unusual. I'm not saying it can't be done. What are you saying then? I'm not saying anything. I'm asking what kind of vitamins he was taking and where does he get them? They both laughed. Well, you were right, Linklater said. Again, that promotion's coming up soon. I don't have to ask if you're going for it. I'll let you know in due course if my application was successful, McIntyre deadpanned. And we'll provide you with any feedback. Good, Linklater nodded. You'll be my boss, but I guess I can live with that. Sidekick role, I'm fine with that. Honest. Strangest thing, McIntyre said. Even after Hamish told us precisely what he'd done, I still found it difficult to picture him killing Ellen Brinkley, even in a fury. I definitely couldn't picture him trying to set up Ivan James the way he did. But it all fits. I guess we can go home now and forget about him until tomorrow. I must admit, I had Ivan James down as a man the minute I first saw him. He's not a murderer, but he's not innocent either. In his cold, lightless house, Ivan James sat down on the sofa, gazing through the windows into the street. He stared down at the mobile phone in his hands, scrolled down to T for Tracy, and then paused. His lips moved silently as he practiced his lines. Then he grinned and pressed the button.
Thank you, Pat Black, for that reading of The Man in the Long Dark Coat. The story was published in our May-June 2022 issue. If you've enjoyed listening to this story, you'll find links to many other story podcasts from the magazine at our website, themysteryplace.com. You'll also find more information about the magazine and our authors on the site. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published by Dell Magazines and Penny Publications. You can find the magazine at your newsstand. Digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. A special thanks to our managing editor Jackie Sherbell and our editorial assistant Kevin Wheeler for their work to produce this podcast series. I'm Linda Landrigan. Thanks for listening.